Anybody know what the topic for tonight is? Tell me so I can get... So what should we talk about? Yeah, it's one of those setup lessons for me. I'm like, how do you tell a bunch of ladies to get ready for the Ladies' Day? Did Mike do this on purpose? Yes. And he gives me a text in Nehemiah, which I understand. We'll look at that in just a moment. But the topic is for our Ladies' Day, increasing our preparation. All right, so guys, what's our part in this tonight? Have y'all been asked?
I try to decorate.
Are you going to try to decorate? Okay. So I sat down and I thought, what is this lesson about? Well, let's ask a question. Are you ladies ready for the 9th and Main Church of Christ Ladies' Day, increasing our faith? That's the subject matter. Julie Orr is the speaker. How many of you know Julie Orr? You know Julie? Yeah. You know, good to see you. Julie, I know her husband Adam better than I do her. You think they're good people? She's a good person? And she's somebody you want to come listen to? What about inviting a friend or another lady? Not a man. This is a ladies' day, not a man's day. Guys, when are we going to have a man's day is what I kept thinking, you know, I was preparing this. What if we had a man's day where we didn't invite the women and we just came up here on a Saturday? You want to decorate? Ryan said he'd help you. What would the decorations look like if it was a man's day or a men's day? Yeah, men's day is usually centered around guns and barbecue and fires. It's always got to have lots of food. We try to incorporate some Bible studies, you know. But then we talk about going out and shooting or killing something again, you know. We call that a men's day or a men's retreat. All right. Be sure and get one of the flyers. Adam is one of the most respected guys I know. He's very well-spoken, and usually behind every good man is a what? A better woman. And I'm sure that's the case with Julie, and so I look forward to hearing how this goes. Remember, September 19th, Saturday, you have less than a month to be prepared for this, ladies. Usually we have lots of visitors, as this is advertised to sister congregations, and that means there is the need for preparation, and so we want to be prepared, but you need to be prepared. How does it look? These are just some preliminary questions as I get into the real lesson, the Bible. How does it look when a congregation puts together a program and invites other people to the program, but our own members don't show up? What does that look like? Go ahead. That's not a men's day. It's a I want the women to speak. I'm just teasing. What does it say when we have and we've given lots of time and attention to prepare and we don't show up? Is there an answer to that question? Someone say something? Our priorities aren't right? Yeah. How many of our ladies' days have you ladies attended in the past? And give me a barometer of how many other congregations usually are the number of. I know Bangs usually comes. Is that right? Do we get a fair amount of attendance? I think last year we had quite a few. Between 60 and 70 outside of our own group, or a total 60 or 70. Okay. I'm going to try to do a better job myself now that I have no excuse, never did have excuse, now that all three of my children are gone. Okay? Of preparing myself more for the things that we plan for here. What do you think about that statement? What does that mean about me if I said that? I'm admitting something. Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Well, I appreciate that. Yes, sir, Eric. Okay, well, I appreciate that. All right, y'all want to talk more about the Braswell household? Go ahead. No. Well, we can always be more prepared. There are certainly things that we want to do. Let's look at the text here, and I appreciate the comments. I wasn't expecting that. I didn't pay them for that. So I was simply saying that reevaluating your life is always a good thing. And even walking my neighborhood, thinking about flyers, thinking about the neighbors that I've been so busily unattended to because I've been raising kids, I told Gina the other night, I don't remember if I told y'all this or not, I told her the other night we were walking, I said, I think I could do a better job being a better neighbor. And I don't have any excuse not to be. They always see me being busy, they see our routines, but when's the last time I really reached out or gone over and knocked on a door and just said, hey, you know, show up to church or I'll kill you. Who said, oh, Ben? That's a joke, Ben. Don't approach that. Anna, clean that up for me, please. I forgot the kids were in here. No, I would never do that. But I can be a better neighbor. Is that true? Is that statement? Do you agree to that statement, Ben? We can be a better neighbor? Well, that's the case here. And so I want to be a better elder. I want to be a better preacher, teacher, a better husband always, a better father, even though my children are growing up quick, it seems. And so I want us to be prepared. And so let's look at the passages that were assigned in Nehemiah chapter 2. I want you to look at Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 17-18. I'm going to emphasize some passages here. Some principles, as usual, as always. And this, of course, is Nehemiah upon his return to Jerusalem, post the 70-year period of captivity in Babylon, being released now by the Persians, as predicted by the prophet Daniel, being fulfilled. And what does Nehemiah see? Really, it starts in verse 11. When he came to Jerusalem, he was there 3 days, and he arose in the night, and a few men with him. He told no one what my God had put in his heart to do at Jerusalem, nor was there any animal with me except the one on which I rode. And as he's traveling through the night, I think it's interesting the details in verse 13. He went out by night through the valley gate, the serpent well, the refuse gate, and viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and its gates, which were burned with fire. Then I went on to the fountain gate and to the king's pool, but there was no room for the animal that was under me to pass. So what's the explanation, what's the description here of what's he seeing as he's returning back to Jerusalem? It's been 70 years since Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians have destroyed this city, destroyed Jerusalem. What is he explaining here? What is this picture in your mind? Particular phrase catches me is in verse 14, there's no room for the animal that was under me to pass. What does that indicate? Yeah. Maybe a lot of rubble, a lot of blocks, you know, stones. Yeah, can't pass. Did you say pass? Well, that's a word I was thinking of, because when we're looking for like pathways through the mountains and people were traversing, going west back in the 19th century, do you normally pick the peak of the mountain to pass over with an animal? So when you've driven out that way, have you noticed like this is so-called pass? What does that mean? It's a way to pass through. It's a safest way. It's got more ground that can, again, be traversed by either animal back then or now, of course, by roads and cars. And so this is what Nehemiah is explaining as he's going back to Jerusalem. And so this is the picture you have in mind of the destruction as a result of the Babylonians 70 years before. Now, notice verse 15. So I went up in the night by the valley and viewed the wall. Then I turned back and entered by the valley gate and so returned. And the officials did not know where I had gone or what I had done. I had not yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or the others who did the work. So you've already got some that have come back. Ezra, the first account, and they're there, but here's Nehemiah, and what is Nehemiah doing here? What does this say about preparation? We know what's going to happen. What is Nehemiah doing here? And one of the things I find interesting about surveying the land here with Nehemiah is he is operating alone. What do you think about that? He's operating alone. No, just in this context. He's doing this alone at the moment. Okay. So he had the confidence, all right. I'm just curious. And they knew the Lord was behind him. I agree to that. Yeah, and he has confidence, sure. Okay. Yes.
Management style there too, just dividing the work and really getting a scope of it. I've never paid much attention there. That idea in number 16, there are some people who are focused on this work, but they haven't been making progress, they haven't really made seemingly significant advancement in it. And so lining up, setting forth that charge before we open this up to everybody. And to a degree, think about Our Ladies' Day, we've kind of done the same thing. The elders' wives kind of largely give up certain areas. They form their committees. Those committees are going to do that work. And so it forms that structure so you're working together but involving people in an organized fashion.
Now that's what my brain's working this way right here. Yes, ma'am, Jamie. Thank you. Those are all ideas. God had given him the charge, laid it upon his heart, and he had not disclosed this completely to his party. But there's something about a Nehemiah who knows there's got to be some change. And this is where the next verses are interesting to me. And the change is interesting because he reflects upon this when he says, look at verse 17 now. Then I said to them, you see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lies waste. And its gates are burned with fire. Come, let us build the wall of Jerusalem that we may no longer be a reproach. Now, of course, this is the temple. This is important to Judaism. They're not technically functionable as a worshiping people without this temple. If you go back, I mean, they're having to reestablish in the book of Ezra one thing in particular so that they can worship. And do you remember what the one thing in particular you have to have in place to worship as a Jew? The priesthood. And so no wonder why 1 Chronicles and then Ezra spend such amount of time cleaning up the nation coming out of captivity, figuring out who is qualified to serve and who isn't. But you've got to have a temple too. That was a part of our tabernacle or temple set up. And this place is in ruins. It's a mess. So I'm trying to be very biblical and contextual here to put this in place. With the Jews, they had to recognize this idea of what Nehemiah says, the reproach. The idea of being a reproach. And so some of my questions a moment ago about what does it look like when you show up to an event we have created and it's not prepared, it's not ready, it's not organized, or we don't support it. How many times preachers in this congregation or teachers have you been invited to be a part of a program and you showed up and it was obvious that the congregation didn't show up, and there were only two or three people. And perhaps, Royce, you may know this. I'm telling you, this is real. This happened to me at Kempner, Texas here last year. I think I did a meeting over there. They invited me, and they were apologetic to me because their own brethren didn't show up for the potluck. And they had to go out and buy food and stuff because they had a lot more visitors and people that did come. And there was an obvious, but I told them, it's okay, I'll still preach the gospel. Maybe they want to hear it, and they didn't. So that's really what I said. But here you have Nehemiah saying, we are a reproach, and we need to fix this. So these are some principles in the text that, again, say something. I'd like to say a lot more about this in practical form, away from the ladies' day. Because I'm telling you, the question in my mind is how are we a reproach in other ways practically as the children of God today? How do people look at us as Christians today and see a reproach, or we would be a reproach, and we're supposed to represent God? Do you see what I'm saying? You see, the point of this lesson, I could care less about decorations personally. Lindsay, I'm sorry. You know what I care about? I care about the content of what she speaks. That to me is the most important thing, and it should be. That's what edifies us, not how pretty the decorations are. But y'all do a good job, and don't misunderstand. I'm not saying that. But preparation here needs to be understood as not something physical, but something spiritual. But again, when I think about us as Christians, how we are so unprepared for things in life, it is always because, and I'm looking at myself, because I've made bad choices. I've made bad time management choices. I have not prepared myself, practiced enough, I have not done laundry soon enough, and thus I have nothing to wear the day before. That's because I don't make good choices, not because I'm poor or because I'm rich. It's because I make bad choices. Something I did in preparing myself, and again, I'm just giving you an example. I prepared a budget in my mind years ago because I knew something. I wanted a crease in my pants and I wanted my shirts to be pressed, and I didn't want my wife to have to do it all the time. She had three kids, and I decided I can afford $100 every 3 months or so. Now, I might wear that shirt or that pair of pants two or three times if I don't sweat in them, but I wanted myself to be prepared because guess who I represent? I represent God first, my wife second, my children third, and the church or whoever or whatever I work for. And preparation takes thought. It takes choice. It takes preparation. You have to think through it, okay? And that's just a simple thing. And so when I think about the Ladies' Day, again, I'm thinking about what we're doing. Do we really care? Look at a couple other passages that are in the context. Let's look at Ezra 7, talking about what Ezra had done, talking about preparation. We'll come back to Nehemiah 2:18. Ben, would you mind reading the passage of Scripture for me? Ezra 7, verse 10. Ezra 7, verse 10. And if you don't mind, I'm going to call upon Gage. How about you look up 2 Chronicles 12, verse 14? 2 Chronicles 12, verse 14. Okay, so Ben, when you have Ezra 7:10, tell me what Ezra did. Tell us all. Thank you. So what did Ezra do before he started to teach, before he started to do, before he started to seek? What did Ezra do first? He prepared his heart. Okay, where did Gage go? Oh, there you are. Thank you. I'm real slow. All right, tell me what Rehoboam did not do. This is King Rehoboam. This is Solomon's son. That's a very interesting passage to me. Thank you. So Rehoboam is the king that takes the place of his father, Solomon. Remember the split with Jeroboam, Rehoboam? That passage tells us really what was wrong with Rehoboam. What was wrong with Rehoboam? He did not prepare his heart. Did not prepare himself. So what does that mean? Let's look at another New Testament passage that applies more to the ladies. Look at Luke chapter 10, verses 38 through 42. Luke 10, 38 through 42. And Kipton, do you mind reading for me, sir? Luke 10, 38 through 42.
Luke 10, 42 reads, "Now it happened as they went that he entered a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary who also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his words. But Martha had distracted with much serving, and she approached him and said, 'Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Therefore, tell her to help me.' And Jesus answered and said to her, 'Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things. But one thing is needed, and Mary has chosen that good part, which will not be taken away from her.'"
Thank you, Kipton. So take these three passages, Luke 10, 38 through 42, Ezra 7, 10, and 2 Chronicles 12, 14. Is there anything wrong with serving, going back to Martha and Mary? No. But really, what was Mary doing before serving here? You think Mary was not a servant? What was the most important thing here? Listening to Jesus. Go back to Nehemiah 2. What was Nehemiah obviously doing before he started talking, and what was he doing? He was preparing. He was getting a plan, and he was trying to get it clear in his mind. So, again, I would want to encourage us to know that we've got plenty of time here, but I would also say it doesn't mean we can wait till the day before. Does that make sense? So what are we doing to prepare for this? Are we making this hospitable? And what does that look like? All right, look at Nehemiah 2, verse 18, just for a moment, just to finish the thought. Nehemiah 2, verse 18. And I'll read this. And I told them of the hand of my God, which had been good upon me, and also the king's words that he had spoken to me. So they said, let us rise up and build. Then they set their hands to do this good work. So they had a mind to go to work. Let's take note of something, that preparation is a lot more than having everything necessarily ready around us. Would y'all say that we could probably show up, not men, but ladies, we could probably buy some pizzas and stuff, feed some people, and just show up Saturday? Now, this is where Lindsay's part comes in. She's going to like this part. Or is it nice and hospitable to have the place cleaned and prepared and ready, and maybe some food a little bit more finely prepared, not just pizza boxes? That's what dudes do, okay? And we're okay with that, right? But this is a ladies' day. Is there anything wrong with that? Being prepared so that we look like a congregation of ladies, and obviously a church that has elders that support the work, and we are prepared, and we will, again, be very hospitable. Is there anything wrong with that? Will that make, what's her name again? Julie. I don't usually listen to Julie, so I just know. Will that make her feel welcome? How will it make her husband feel if he feels or knows that, hey, they really had a good turnout, the place was really nicely prepared, and they were all ready to serve? So again, you don't want to be clamoring around at the last minute. You want to be have it ready so that you can show up, visit, do your registration, and then when it's time to sit down, it all falls into place. So again, that's something that I think is very interesting. I want to look at something a little bit closer here. Look at the seven phrases that prepare God's people in Nehemiah 2, 17 through 18. Let's note the seven phrases here that was pointed out to me as I was studying. Seven phrases in Nehemiah 2, 17 through 18. The first one is, as you see the distress that we are in. Notice that in Nehemiah 2, verse 17. You see the distress that we are in. That's the first statement. The second statement is, Jerusalem lieth waste. That's the second statement. Preparation will understand what is at stake here. The third statement is come and let us build. Again, preparation invites participation. Now we need help. You're going to try to do this by yourself, or you're going to try to raise the standard, get some help involved? And so he brought them. That's why I kind of asked the question. He's surveying this in his mind by himself at first. He's looking at what's going on, and now he is creating a morale, a culture that will go to work. The fourth thing that is said, the hand of my God, which was good upon me. Notice again the idea that the hand of God, which was good upon him in verse 18, is a reminder of providence. Who amongst us can say that God has not been good to us? So I think the fourth statement here may be the most important in my mind, because it has an idea of thankfulness. Because a thankful people will work hard. An unthankful people will do just the opposite, and also verbally, vocally say things out loud. What do an unthankful people sound like? Complainers. I don't have time, I can't do this, and that's hard. That's hard. It's hard to listen to. All right, the fifth statement. As also the king's words here. He mentions the king's words as a fifth statement. Well, Nehemiah trusted God, but he did not despise planning. Again, he did not despise the authority of the secular authorities. He wasn't a rebel or a rogue, but he uses lawful means. He uses the lawful means that he's in. You know, one of the things we pray a lot, and I'm glad we do, is that we're thankful for the freedoms we have in this country. Are you thankful for that? How much more thankful would you be if this privilege was taken away and we had to ask for permission from our government to meet at a certain time, a scheduled time, and now you're constrained? And we couldn't have ladies' days, or we couldn't, or that would be an extra thing. Now, what is that about? What are y'all wanting to do now? Do you think that's happening in the world we live in other countries, in certain places? You think people in North Korea, China, and other places can just simply, or Cuba, not far from us, can just do what they want to do?
We have brethren in Canada. There's brothers, I've never met them in person, but I follow them on social media. And he's a preacher, and he's always live streaming. They have services in their double car garage. And they have like 30 people. And now Canada is coming down on, like, they cannot speak against homosexuality. Like, and he's posting about this now because it's becoming...
It's considered hate speech?
Yes. Yeah. It's becoming a problem because he's been so open on social media before about their services. So now it's like, look what's happening. Pray for us, please. And that's just Canada.
Just Canada. Just north of the, border. There you go. I know in Cuba, several years back, Leon, you're going to go, it looks like, hopefully with Wayne Brewer, to Mexico later this year. Now, Mexico will be an interesting experience for you. If you haven't been, it's different, but you freely can probably get by with about anything you want to. But Wayne Brewer and a group of preachers were invited and got to go to Cuba. I forget about... maybe 10 years ago. It's been 5, 10. And they were told before they got there they had to follow certain rules. They could not do or say certain things. So the choice was, do we go or do we not go? Were they as free to speak openly as we are here today and now? Because Cuba, just right off of Florida, is not a free island. Country. So again, yet you wonder again about Nehemiah's freedoms. Was his freedom the exact same as our freedoms here today? Immediately, Sanballat and others will show up and start opposing this effort. They will face opposition. Have you read the book of Esther lately about Haman and how he tried to have Mordecai destroyed and all the Jews? Is that the same kind of freedom we enjoy today? Again, if we were to lose this freedom and we had to go seek permission all the time to have these events, how much more thankful would you be, or how much more prepared? These are real historical things that are going on. So I just want to remind you that it's a privilege, it's a blessing to be able to do this. So again, what did I get to? Fifth one? So... using lawful means. Okay, let's look at the sixth one. Let us rise up and build. Again, look at the decision in that statement now. Let us rise up and build. The preparation here reached a decision. The idea was revealed. The authority is given. The work is before us. Rise up marks a change in posture. Let us rise up. These individuals were ready to build, go to work. And how many of you here, I don't ever want to sound rude, but not everybody's good at everything. Don't misunderstand. But when it comes to seeking volunteers or help in anything you do, who do you note as the individuals that you really, really appreciate? Those who sit down or those who rise up? How many volunteers do we have? You don't have to give the number. Ladies, are y'all already talking? Do you have enough help? Do you need some more help? Do we need to... do you really want us guys decorating, Lindsay? Okay. And we appreciate that. The same thing can be said again about Bible classes, Bible class teachers. We're not trying to force anybody or ask anybody to do something they're not comfortable doing. And I certainly don't want anybody teaching that's not qualified to be teaching. Don't misunderstand. Because I care for your children. I want you having the best prepared Bible class teachers. But is it so encouraging when we have people that are rising up? We want to help you learn how to be a better teacher. That's why we provide opportunities for the young men to lead songs, to read scriptures. Why? Because what happens when we're all dead and gone? Freisinger boys. Y'all going to rise up. The church will not just continue just sitting there. I remember when I preached at a little congregation outside of Bastrop, Texas. And it was full of ladies. There were, I think, two or three guys. And I noticed in the parking lot there were some guys that stayed in their cars. They wouldn't come in. So I preached. And it wasn't uncommon for me to show up as the preacher. And they might ask me, can you be a part of the Lord's table? Sure. It wouldn't be surprising to me if I showed up and the only guy that could lead singing wasn't there. Johnny Regeer was his name. Upton, Texas. Remember Upton? Neat little church building. It had the cemetery outside of it. Old part of Texas. And I'd show up and they'd say, you don't mind leading singing to them? I'm like, sure. I'll go from my sermon invitation to the invitation song. Ever done that, Ryan? And the next thing you know, I'm thinking, well, who's going to do the closing prayer? You are. Well, what had happened if I hadn't have done it? Could I ask a lady to do it? It's not authorized. It would have been nice if we'd have had some men rise up and made themselves qualified. It was interesting to me about Upton, Texas. A lot of what held on there was that old building. They didn't want to let go of the building. But they didn't know how to lead either. They didn't know how to teach. But y'all remember Rob Whitaker? Remember when he came here? Rob Whitaker had preached there before I did. And he had actually got them started to where they were having a Wednesday night Bible study. So when Gene and I went Southwest, we continued that. We took over and we continued the effort of every Sunday I would go to Upton, Texas, preach, teach, go to school all week, and then I would drive back to Upton on Wednesday nights. And that was a pretty good little drive from us. We were close to Dripping Springs where we lived then. And so I just remember that. I remember thinking, well, where are the men? The women were always, and Leon, this one's for you. That's where I learned about preaching too long. Not picking on you, I'm just telling you. I wanted to feed them the whole cow. And I still do sometimes. But I remember a sweet old lady at Upton Church of Christ came to me after services one Sunday. I'd preached a long time. And she said, oh, I like your preaching. But could you please just keep it down to 45 minutes or less? Because my husband is one of those guys sitting in the car, and he sure is a mean old man to live with. And you're making my life harder. And I want to be at church. You know what Brian said? You betcha. It's one of the most humbling lessons I ever learned in my life. And you know what we did before that old man died? We baptized him. That's a true story. That's a true story. So a little bit of a pivot or change in my attitude and my thought process didn't change the truth. I didn't change service times. I changed me a little bit on my methodology. And it actually worked. So, yes.
Me, the thing is about being uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable right now raising my hand and saying this. We got to get out of our comfort zone in order to grow. You can be very qualified and uncomfortable, so therefore you just sit back. And that's not right. Not right at all. So,
thank you. No, it's... First time I preached, I think I cried through the entire lesson because I was so scared. I was so humbled too because I was this proud boy that said, yeah, I had someone basically put me in a corner and I couldn't say no. If I'd have said no, I'd have been like, who am I saying no to here? That's the challenge. Is when you realize who you're actually saying no to. It's not me, not the elder. It's really, you know, you start asking yourself, I'm not asking anyone to do something they're not qualified to do. I don't want, like I said, but if I think you're qualified, please tell me why you're not. You know, that puts you in a corner too, because now you got to tell me how bad you are. And who wants to say that about yourself? It's kind of like a resume. You know, I'm not looking for a loser. I'm looking for a what? A winner. I'm looking for a killer, as we said the other day. And so, all right. And the final seventh thought here is, and I'm watching the clock, is notice they strengthened their hands for this good work. They strengthened their hands. Notice that statement. Let us rise up, and they set their hands to do this good work. They identified it as good work. The phrase here, this good work, describes more than just a burst of emotion. The hands here were made firm for labor. Chapter 4 of this book will show you why this mattered. Because it's in chapter 4, while being ridiculed, being threatened by Sanballat and all these bad guys, they're suffering fatigue, fear, internal pressure is starting to follow. The prepared people, kind of like going to boot camp, they're prepared for the battle. They're prepared for the hard times. They are not expecting no opposition. They are people with faith who are committed and recognize that opposition is always around the corner. I guarantee you, when something breaks, as soon as something breaks, you'll find out who's a quitter and who's a winner. Because as soon as something breaks in life, I've seen this all the time. Oh, man. And they just walk off. And I'm like, we're in a world of broken things and broken people. What do you do all your days, Eli? Fix non-broken things or broken things? You get paid pretty good to fix broken things. Well, think about people here. We're here to help you. Who's not broken at times? We're here to fix broken things. We're here to help people get over sin. What is sin? And so the attitude is the church, the work that we do, is it good work or bad work? There's no in between. It's good work. All right? Evan, Leon, you've been preaching. Do you find, you don't have to answer if you don't want to, but do you find sometimes a little monotony in ministry? Leon? Same old sometimes? Same old Bibles that you feel? Do you ever get, they call it deja vu. It's not anything missing. You will. And I'm going to tell you why. It's a wonderful thing when you think about it, because people are people. And they're created in whose image? And they have the same habits. You think any of us in here are really different, unique, outstanding, better than one another? No, we're all suffering with problems in this congregation. It's a matter of how we are working through those conversations that really says about our character, who we are. But if we sit around and complain and we don't recognize this as a good work, then nothing will ever get done. So again, is this a good work or is this a bad work? Is it good work or bad work? Is it worth your time? If it's worth your time, then go to work. Who will rise up? And so that's pretty much the lesson. Yes, sir. That's right.
You know, but when you get to do that, when you rise up to do things, do them right the first time. And benefit everybody doing it.
And it always feels good. I tried to teach my kids this. Just this is what I did. I knew when I completed a job, I finished a job, that's when it felt good. Whether it was building fence or fixing plumbing problems, cutting the grass. But if my son ever showed up and the job wasn't finished, do you think I said good job? And that happened. I'd hear that lawnmower kick off, or, you know, here it come, you know, and he'd be on the couch, you know. What are you doing, son? I was to take a break. All right. How long are you going to take a break? Well, I don't know. I'll tell you what, why don't you get back out there and just finish that job? You got plenty of gas? Yeah, it's full. You need anything to start it back up? No. Well, when you get done, you can come back and take a break. How about that? And the attitude was always better. I can remember those days. Now they're starting to feel like just yesterday. I can't believe they're growing up so fast. Wow.
I don't know the history of Lane Biggs and when they started or how it started. I know that throughout my Christianity, going on 40 years, it's been very encouraging. But I will say here at Ninth and Main, one of the things that I have found to be the most encouraging as opposed to other congregations and times is that there are ladies who are unable to necessarily be here the day of the event, but they are a part of the preparation. They are a part of the planning. They are a part of getting it ready for those that are going to be here because they see it as a good work, and they do not have to have their presence to be a part of that in the sense of what they've been involved in and engaged in and the work that goes into it. And I'm so encouraged by that because it shows that they have a commitment to the purpose of the event, not just the limelight of the event.
That's a good point.
So I love the fact that our ladies are showing up for the preparation, showing up for the work, whereas they don't necessarily have to be present for the event to the others, but they want to be a part of the work that takes place, that good work that takes place. And I'm just encouraged by that, and I wanted to share that.
That's exactly right. One of the things we know about Ninth and Main is that you must like each other because Steve wants to stay here and keep the doors locked, and he wants to make sure, like, I'm ready to go home. And some of y'all just won't leave. Well, you're not staying because you don't like each other. So that is obvious here. There is a familial feel here that is real and genuine, and we want to keep that. But it comes from this idea, this attitude. Two passages and we'll end. Look at 1 Peter 3:15. Two passages, 1 Peter 3:15 and 2 Timothy 2:21. I'll pick on a couple older guys. Dietrich, do you mind getting 1 Peter 3:15? And Paul, do you mind getting 2 Timothy 2:21? And just pick up on the two parallel principles here that we must know.
Well, sanctify the Lord God in your hearts, and always be ready to give a defense to everyone who asks you, a reason for the hope that is in you with meekness and fear.
Thank you. Notice the idea, this your preparation. Just think of sanctify the Lord God in your heart. Set apart. You got to be ready, okay, Paul?
2 Timothy 2:21.
Yes, sir.
If a man therefore purge himself from these, he shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified and meet for the master's use, and prepared unto every good work.
Thank you. And I would add Titus 3:1 other, be ready for every good work, Paul would write to Titus. If you notice in those two passages, 1 Peter 3:15, 2 Timothy 2:21, the idea of preparation is there. Having your heart sanctified unto the Lord. Does that just happen casually, or is that an intentional effort to have your heart separated, ready always to give? What's the word there? Ready to give what all the time? In the English, it's the word answer. What's the original word? Apologia or apologetics. What does that mean? A defense. Again, ready to give a defense or an answer. Does that mean you're always argumentative? But you know how to argue correctly. Yeah. Yeah. And then 2 Timothy 2:21 says that a man that has sanctified himself, his vessel, his body, he is meet for the master's use. Again, that's what we're talking about. Are we ready, prepared for the master's use? Whose service are we in here? I could go on off this for a long time. In Romans chapter 6, we are servants unto righteousness, not unrighteousness. You know what the word servant means in Romans chapter 6? It's the word doulos. The idea of doulos in the original language means what? A slave. That's why the master word is used there in 2 Timothy 2:21. We're slaves. Do slaves have a lot of congenial choices in life, or are we pretty much supposed to be under the master's service? We need to recognize who our master is, though. How loving and long-suffering he is. He's not going to forgive where we are wasteful and idle. He's going to correct us in the day of judgment. The day of judgment is going to be a great day. I'm done. But have you ever thought how glad I am, or how glad you are, that you're not the judge of the world? Me? What about you? I know, we'd be in trouble if I was the judge. There'd be a lot of, like Ben, there'd be a lot of dead people. Sorry, Ben. Your mom and dad know who I am, I think. So, yeah. There's going to be a great day coming, though, and it matters how we've prepared ourselves and made ourselves ready for the master service. And so, I'm here. I'm with you. I live every day of this life wondering from time to time. I had a great lunch Saturday, and the person, member of the church here, I won't tell you who, but he said something to me I won't forget. He said, at his age, he still has self-doubt. And I found that to be one of the most humbling things said, because who doesn't suffer some self-doubt? But who do we look to overcome self-doubt? Well, our brethren would be good, but faithful brethren, of course, but the Bible, God. That's the only way I can overcome my own self, because I'm not sufficient of myself. I need God. So, any comments or questions? Are we preparing ourselves for the Ladies' Day? Lindsay, are we going to be prepared? Okay. All right, y'all heard her. Rise up, sisters. Okay. Appreciate your time and attention, and I hope that we had something good to say there. And Ryan will lead us in a closing prayer.